The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
In our out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness grow inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered. Heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plenitude before you. Though your destination is not clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. Good morning. And welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, and I have the honor and pleasure of serving here as minister, serving this community of love and this community of accountability, where we hold each other in care and where we push each other to strive for betterment. That's our religion in a nutshell. That faith, which includes a radical welcome to all of you and all of you. So you are welcome here. To you who are here in person, to you who are here in spirit and joining us virtually, you are welcome here. With your wanderings, with your questions, with your answers, with your doubts, with your wrong turns and returns, you are welcome here. Hold nothing back. For your soul senses the world that awaits you. Come, let us live into that new world together. Come, let us worship together. We start our worship, as Unitarian Universalists do, across the nation and around the globe today by lighting the flaming chalice, the symbol of our free faith. I've asked Rich Webster to come and light our chalice with these words by Edward Everett Hale. I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. And please respond as we light our peace lamp. May peace be with us. If you would, please rise in body or in spirit and join in our gathering song, There Is More Love Somewhere. I don't think I was, we're doing something different for me. Maybe you've done this. We're going to stay seated. We're going to stay seated so that people in the back can see. Which is great, because we want people to be able to see. Thank you. No, that's fine. Let's sing. have here the intersection of logistics and faith and sort of what we want to do and what is possible. So thank you for moving the poinsettia too. Because we want to do something. This is a great idea, but it's not going to work out. We have to adapt. We can adapt. We can do that. Our story today is adapted from The Star Thrower by Lauren Isley. Right there. See? Hear that? There's the book. If anyone wants to read the essay by Lauren Isley, you may come and borrow this book after service, not right now. he's very involved in his writing, and it's rich in a way that that makes it hard to share without paraphrasing. So I'm going to paraphrase his story, and you may know this. Anyone may come forward, but all the pictures are up here, and there's an empty row. So you may come forward, you may stay where you are. It's up to you. Yeah, come on. You can even sit right here. That's fine. The parable of the star thrower is about someone walking along the beach. Yeah, you want to sit here? Oh, I think you just sat on something. Did someone lose an earring? We have an earring I just found. Blue and black earring. I'll hold on to that. So there's someone on a beach walking along and they see starfish just all over. And this happens sometimes when there's a big storm. There's starfish washed up just like this. Starfish all over the beach. And they're walking along and they see someone in the distance. And this other person in the distance is bending over, picking up a starfish and throwing it back in the ocean. Bending over, picking up a starfish, throwing it back in the ocean. And Peterson says, okay, all right, I see what they're doing. And still sees all these starfish. And so they ask them, they say, I see you picking up that one starfish and throwing it back in, but there are hundreds, there are thousands of starfish. You can't possibly make a difference. You can't possibly make a difference by throwing these in. And the person bends down, picks up the starfish, throws it in, says, it makes a difference for this one. Makes a difference for this one that I'm throwing in right now. I might not be able to save the entire community of starfish, if it's a community, but I can save this one. There is our story I leave you with so you can think about how you throw starfish in, what you have seen that could be a starfish that you're throwing in. And we will keep talking about this. So thank you very much, and let us sing our children to their classes.
Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the Spirit of God surround you everywhere. Everywhere you may go.
No. I will leave this earring and this book up here in case you want to look at or think you own either one. If I had holes, I may take it for myself. It's a nice one. Maybe it's lucky I don't. We have a brief reading today from Dorothy Day, and it may be familiar, just as the star thrower story may be familiar. And I think I put it, yeah. I will block your view now, too. And it may be a little small, so I'm going to read it, and I have it up here. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time. Take one step at a time. A pebble cast into the pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has the right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to do. Yeah, I agree, but that's a tough one, Dorothy. Like, can I, like, sit? I mean, No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to do. I mean, that's a big contrast from our prelude song, which I like, but John Mayer saying, waiting for the world to change. A little bit more passive than Dorothy Day, who says, you can't sit there. There's too much to do. Get up. Do it. Lay the brick. Throw the pebble. All right? So which one is it? Can we sit down and wait for the world to change? Or do we have no right to sit down with so much work to do? But when I look at the topic of world betterment and my part in it, my mind goes to both real world and fictional examples. And fiction for me is a great place to explore the possible futures we have. And this is especially science fiction. I know I have some other science fiction fans in the room. Like, what possible futures are there for humanity, individual, communally, right? This is a way to imagine possible outcomes. I mean, just look at the like dystopian future movies and books. They're a plethora, just as the utopian future, maybe more dystopian. That says something about our culture. I don't know what, but something. And one of those visions of the future that comes to me and comes to mind specifically is Star Trek, which some of you may know, because I know, I joined a conversation a couple of weeks ago about which Star Trek character is your favorite. So I know there are others here, and I can see some of you, because people had answers to that question. Some of you may be like, I don't know. But we don't all walk the same religious path. So here's a little background on Star Trek. Star Trek is a TV series, a number of movies, books, really it spans the media of what that is. And it's about people voyaging through space, hence Trek, right? There's some meaning to that name. And the initial and the very broad premise is a spaceship of explorers going through a universe on a five-year mission. Now, Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek in the 1960s, had a vision of the future where all people could live in harmony and peace. That was his vision. He said, look to the future. People will live in harmony. People will live in peace. And we will go out and share that message of unity and peace with the unexplored universe. So his ideas and his wrestling with current issues of the time came through in the plots of his TV shows, including racism, greed, love, loyalty, justice among many. I mean, the original series from the 60s is a little heavy-handed, but for the time, wow. First interracial kiss, Star Trek. Star Trek has, I mean, there's a whole lot to be said about sexism in that kiss and in the show, but that, I mean, they're baby steps. And science fiction is sometimes pushing the boundaries. It has many iterations from 64 until the present. And part of my fascination with the show is seeing how this approach to social topics changes and evolves over time. Now, what was, we can't show that on TV. We can't do this in a movie. To like, okay, all right. What about this? What if this happens? And the whole reason I'm telling you this is from the worship theme for this month, which is resistance. Remember Easter when we heard the story of the Lorax and Jesus and how we resist oppression. We resist the world. Did any of you plant your seeds? I handed out seeds on Easter. Is that on Mother's Day? You will plant them on Mother's Day? Okay. It's okay if you didn't, or if you like forgot about that. Oh, there were seeds, that's right. Yeah, the Lorax and the seed, yeah. So resisting, now this is the thing with Star Trek, is when I hear the word resistance, I immediately think of this alien species, fictional alien species called the Borg. As I always said, resistance is futile. They're a species bent on achieving perfection from assimilating other cultures, other species, taking their technology, taking over and destroying individuality. And a common phrase used by the Borg is, we are the Borg. Your biological and technological distinctiveness will be added to our own. Resistance is futile. That's their catchphrase. They overrun entire planets. And in doing so, they erase the existing culture. And the parallels to colonization, to globalization, right? I mean, like, that's striking. Like, resistance is futile. We are going to take over your culture, take what we like about it, and the rest, it's gone. Wow. I mean, taking over other cultures, assimilating them to fit the majority. Yeah, there's some parallels there. Not so comfortable. So resistance is futile. When I hear resistance, I think of these aliens and leads me directly to the question of whether I have a right to sit and feel overwhelmed or whether I need to get up and resist. Is resisting a seemingly overwhelming, all-powerful, seemingly all-powerful force? Is it futile? Do I make a difference? I mean, let's look at the starfish here too, right? For that story speaks to the same issue, the same thing, but with a different take. Both the Borg and the Star Thrower are parables of people up against an injustice which seems insurmountable. Nothing can be done. One explicitly says that resistance will do nothing. The other maybe implies it. There are so many starfish. There's so many injustices in the world. The conclusion for that one person on the beach, however, is I can make a difference to one at a time. If not everyone, then one at a time. Without my interfering, this starfish would have died. So our mission as a congregation, to bring it back to us, includes caring for the environment, promoting social justice and equality in the larger community. But when we try to live into promoting social justice and equality, when we try to care for the environment, we are often resisting the status quo. We often end up resisting our culture. What difference can this small congregation make? Are you ready for some challenge? I come here to comfort, but also the challenge. So. And there were some vocalizations of a yes. I didn't hear any big no's, so I'm going with it. If Unitarian Universalists, I was asked this once, and so I feel like I can re-ask it. If Unitarian Universalists are very concerned with the environment, why aren't more of us vegetarian or vegan? Recognizing the environmental impact of eating meat. I think part of the answer is understanding how futile social justice causes can seem. We can have other questions. Why don't we have low-flow toilets or all LED lights? Yeah, money's one thing, absolutely. There's a cost. There's some LEDs. Yeah, see, like, some of it we've done. And there's that pushback. It's like, oh, but I eat local. It's like, yeah, I'm trying not to judge you. I'm trying to challenge you. Why isn't our house of worship also a multi-use community center where people in need can spend the night? There are many reasons why not. But if we want to live into our more just, more loving community, why not? Are we known in the community for our social justice work? Why aren't we overwhelmed by financial gifts to support our mission? I can go personal and communal. Oh, I'm getting uncomfortable. These are meant to be challenging questions, right? This is meant to make us feel a little bit uncomfortable. So when I think deeply and truly about my responses to these questions, a lot of it comes down to my belief that sometimes it's not going to make a difference. Like that my one voice won't make a difference. I mean, what does it matter if I don't eat meat? One person's impact isn't much compared with all of Western society. And what's the sign on McDonald's? Like 44 billion served daily. I mean, it's some obscene number. It's like, well, if I cut out one meal of meat, that doesn't make a difference. My donation of $20 to the offering or in the thing in the back, it's like, I can't possibly make a difference to the organization I'm supporting. What's $20? or walking down the street, it's just a piece of litter, and there's another and another. I can't possibly pick up every piece of trash I see on the ground. People I meet in the supermarket while driving aren't nice to me. Why should I be nice to them? It's not going to make a difference, right? I mean, I'm naming my inner dialogue here. This is what I feel myself. And I encourage you to look at your own reactions, our own responses. As the fact is, resistance often feels futile. One person's actions against what is accepted and normal, this is how we act, this is how our culture does it, this is how people do this activity or interact with each other, can't push against that. Pushing against that makes no difference at all. So, and as I go back from personal and communal, I'm switching back with my questions and examples and some intersection. So can someone tell we are Unitarian Universalists just by observing our outward actions of peace and justice? And someone would be like, I don't know that person, but they look like a Unitarian Universalist for what they're... I don't know. I mean, are we more likely to pick up trash we see on the sidewalk or more likely to smile or talk with someone we don't know? I don't know. It's good to challenge ourselves personally and communally because then we can celebrate what we do. We can celebrate what we already do, and then we can push ourselves to go further where we may have areas for growth. What comes easy for you? What's hard for you? Personally, I'm pretty good at picking up trash. I mean, it's like, I can see, like, I'm pretty good at that. I can put that on my resume. I can pick up trash. No, if I'm walking around, like, oh, I see some trash, I think maybe that's why the earring is focused on, like, little things on the ground. It's my small action, a very small action of resistance. I'm also good at greeting strangers, smiling at them. Different reactions, but I'm pretty good at, I think, greeting people with happiness, with care, showing that to people I don't know. What I'm not good at is entering situations where there may be conflict. I'm not very good with that. And this goes, there's a story I want to tell you. We went to Dutch Wonderland just a couple weeks ago. My family and I went there to celebrate my son's birthday. We're in Dutch Wonderland. It's an amusement park about 60 years old. Actually, they're celebrating their 60th birthday, so it's 60 years old. Some of their stuff is original. I'll just put it that way. And it's aimed at younger children. So, like, my kids are pretty young. So it's really like 2 to preteen. Like, it's perfect for them. It's great. The biggest roller coaster is, it gets a thrill, but there's nothing upside down, nothing looped. So we went, and there's this animatronic show, which looks original, which means it's a fiddling band of animals, some sort of anthropomorphized animals. It's really weird. So human-sized fox, raccoon, bear, cow, and beaver, and they're all sort of stiffly moving, and playing country music and talking in between their sets, I guess. But it's not just weird, it's offensive. Like it is actually not just in like it's worn down, but it is literally offensive. One of the characters, the other characters, they make fun of the bear because he's slow and he's not very smart. There's a bull who is dressed up in native headdress with feathers and speaks in a very stereotypically way that we might see in the 1940s or 50s of Native American speaking. So it's cringeworthy, offensive. It's terrible. And so what do I do? What do I do? I see this racist show being put on for literally thousands of children, right? I mean, this is maybe not indoctrination, but like teaching them that it's okay to make fun of people who are different from you. And I say nothing. Well, I cringe and I'm like, can you believe this? To the people with me who agree. Because I'm not good at entering in that place of possible conflict. What impact could I have? Would I send an email to Dutch Wonderland and say, I'm not coming back because, and they'd say, okay, great. We'll have all those other people come. What impact? So I did nothing, but I can learn. I can learn from others. And my sister and her family came with me. I have a twin sister, and she does not stand for oppression. She does not. So she saw this. She's like, this is horrible. And I said, yeah, isn't it horrible? She's like, no, this is horrible. We need to do something about it. I'm like, okay. I don't want to get in conflict. And so she composed a letter to Dutch Wonderland and said, this is inappropriate. This is not appropriate for this time. It needs to be updated. You can also fix those animatronics. But like, the dialogue is offensive, and it's racist, and it's mean. And then what? Because this is part of the futile feeling for me, that even when we take action, we don't know what's going to happen. Oftentimes. Maybe more often than not, we don't know what's going to happen. Is our resistance to any injustice going to make a difference? Does writing a letter to Dutch Wonderland stop spreading racial stereotypes? Doesn't hurt. Yeah, it doesn't hurt. When we switch to LED lights, will that help save our environment? It doesn't hurt, but will it make a difference? Does putting up a Black Lives Matter banner help assuage an onslaught of fear and hate? When we see someone pick up a starfish and throw it in the sea, when we notice that, how can that make a difference for the hundreds, thousands strewn along the beach? When you decide to ride a bike to work instead of a car, how can that make a difference with so many other polluting vehicles on the road? And the difficult news is, we can say it doesn't hurt, but the difficult thing is that we don't know. We don't always know the impact of our actions. We can't know for certain. There are many times when we just don't know, and other times when we really can see, like, that did not make an impact. That didn't do anything. And here's where it gets sort of sticky. So what do we do with our imperfect, incomplete knowledge? Our actions seem pointless. It's near impossible to test the impact, prove they aren't pointless. I mean, I can keep saying, well, it doesn't hurt, but how long can we go with that? I mean, I would get tired. I'd be like, I don't know, maybe. I see sort of two options of how, where we can go from here. One is the complete, like, well, it's not going to make a difference. Why do I do anything? I like John Mayer, but I'll just wait for the world to change. Good. I'm good. I'll wait. You guys got it. I don't need to. That's one. Assuming that our actions don't make a difference, we do nothing. And I hope it's not a surprise that that's not the one I agree with. I mean, that's not what I'm preaching here. That's not where I'm going. I think as Unitarian Universalists, as people of faith, of people who, like, I'm here. Why are you here? I'm here to help make the world better. I'm here to help make me better. Something along those lines, hopefully. We have the opposite stance. We can live and act from a place of deep faith. And when I say faith, I mean faith that our actions do have an impact. Faith that resistance is not futile. Faith that resistance is actually essential, that we must resist. Faith that our actions, whether large or small, matter, and they matter deeply. They matter deeply. It's not just, it might. It's like, no. It makes a difference. And that's the crux right there. Small actions can and do have an impact. I have faith that what I say and do here makes an impact. I have faith that a religious organization helps to promote justice and equality. I live with a deep and sustaining faith that our actions, no matter how small, make a difference. Because in my deepest, inmost heart and gut, I know that. There's no proof. I know it. I believe it. I believe that throwing a starfish back in the ocean, you're not only making a difference for that one small creature, but the world is a better place for it. The world is a better place. That small, nearly insignificant action is making a difference in the world. There is more life, there is more love, there is more awe. Likewise, being kind to your neighbors, smiling to those whom you pass on the street, positive impacts, and they go on like the pebble thrown into the lake. The ripples go out. I walk around and I pick up litter. I can notice where I've walked before because there's less trash. I mean, it's very, oh, wow. Why is there less? Oh, I did that. I made an impact. My sister got a response from Dutch Wonderland saying that they are forwarding the message up to management and that they seem to be taking it very seriously. I mean, I was blown away. I thought they would just be like, check, thank you. Here's like 10% off next visit. No, they're saying, thank you for that input. We're looking into it and we've contacted someone who can make a difference. Have you ever waved someone along in traffic? And then have you ever seen that person wave someone on along? That right there, that's it. That's what's happening. That is the love being spread. That is saying my small action, all I did was like tap the brakes and go like this. Look, they're having a better day because of it. And the person in front of them, how far will that go? We don't know. That's it. That's the small action actually making a difference in the world. Wow. Picking up litter, helping a stranger. These are infinitesimal actions have great repercussions in the world. It's about resistance, and it's about humility. Here's the two together, humility. We need to have the humility to do those small actions. It takes some humility, like, you can go in front of me. I'll pick up that candy wrapper. I'll say what I believe and step up. It's the humility to do those small actions, knowing that it might not have an impact, knowing that no one else might know what we do. No one else might remember what we do. If there's no one humble enough, no one will ever do those small tasks. So it's being humble enough to do the seemingly insignificant and having faith enough to acknowledge the importance. Catch that? It's being humble enough to do those small actions, but having the faith that those small actions have impact. Imagine if we acted, imagine if you will, if we acted as if all of our actions had large and meaningful impact. Every single thing you did. The next person you see in the supermarket, you know deep down that how you interact with them will affect their life. Your smile, your greeting will make them feel better. When you're driving home from church, for example, today, and you interact with another driver, however that interaction goes, you know deep down that your actions will affect that person's life. Because it will, right? That's the faith. What you eat, what you say, how you act, they're all methods of resisting for a more loving, a more justice-centered, a more equitable world. So here's my charge to all of us, the charge to everyone. Is at the moment when you think someone should, whatever that is you're filling in the blank with, someone should really speak up for the oppressed. Someone should really, whatever it is, say something about this racist animatronic show. Someone should really do that. Be that person. Be that someone. Be that. That's the charge. Live into that humility. Live into that resistance and the faith of our religion. Because when we live into that faith that the world is good, we create that good world. So we have to live into the resistance. We have to live into that resistance of making the world good. The Borg had it wrong. Resistance is not futile. It's how we live and how we make the world a better place. That's how we do it. So seemingly small actions taken by individuals, taken by communities, are how we live out our religion. There's no other way. So I leave you with that charge to be the somebody, but also for some questions to spark discussion in social hour and a familiar quote by Margaret Mead. Here are your questions. What are some everyday things that you do to help promote justice and equality? Very, very, very small. What are some things you do? How do you resist injustice in the world through large or small actions? Those are your questions to talk with each other, and then our quote. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. Amen.
I can change the world with my own two hands, make a better place with my own two hands, make a kinder place.
If you want to know a small, very, very, very small action you can take that makes a huge impact, it's sharing and listening. Sharing from deep within you, listening to someone else, letting them share, hearing them, seeing them for who they are. And we model this each week in our Matters of the Heart. We can't all share everything, but that which pours out from within you, that which you must share with this community. We take a moment each week to do that seemingly insignificant but so important task of sharing and listening. So if you feel so moved, please come forward to the microphone. And if you're online, You can raise your virtual or physical hand, and we will get you unmuted. Let's remain seated and sing. Rise in spirit and sing Spirit of Life. Some days we come together and we do not have much sharing. Other days we come together and our lives pour out from us. And so I encourage all of you, if either one of those gives you anxiety, like why another person, or why is no one sharing? To sit with that anxiety and to notice that this is a holy time and space, whether everyone needs to share or whether no one needs to share. This is why we have this time. It's a present, a place for all of you, and for me, for everyone here. Please pray with me. Divinity is our birthright. God nods to God from behind each of us. But let us remember, as Mr. Emerson said, divinity is behind our failures and follies also. In the silence that follows, let us pray that we may notice and accept the divinity of tiny things, the divine of ordinary miracles, and even in the awkward mistakes. In frivolous conversations with friends, in wordless companionship with a loved one, in the work that seems futile one day, but resonates with meaning the next, in the shared meal and the shopping list, in the peaceful sleep, in the simple procession of the spring days. We pray this moment to keep tender vigil over our precious, imperfect lives, to know each one as a vessel, however cracked or broken, of the holy, so we may strive to recognize the indwelling presence of God in all people, in all living things, and even in ourselves. In the silence, may we open our hearts. So may it be, and amen. We're going to sit down for all of them. We're sitting down. Lift every voice and sing, but not lift every body and sing. So lift every spirit as we join in, lift every voice and sing. If you feel the need to stand up, just go to the sides in the back. We can do that. That's okay.
Voice and sing till earth and heaven.
I'll make the same comment about singing. Sometimes we're like, I wanted more of that song. And sometimes we're like, oh my gosh. Again, notice that anxiety. Let it go. And use it as a place to touch something greater than yourself. We close our worship today by extinguishing our chalice. And we extinguish these flames, but not the hope, not the faith that our actions make a difference that they symbolize. So may these lights we end here continue to live on in our minds, our hearts, and our souls. Blessed are the droplets, for they shall fill the bucket to overflowing. Blessed are they who know there is a bucket, for they shall be filled with hope. Blessed who are they who can see beyond their lifetimes, for they shall walk in faith that their work will not be in vain. Blessed are we when we only appear so small, because what we create is so big. Blessed are we who are part of one another. Blessed are we when we give new life and light to others, for we will live more richly ourselves. Blessed be, and amen.